Voice of America, Washington, D.C., signing on.
When the Santa's out. Hello and welcome to another episode of Radio Contra, the podcast of AmericanPartisan.org and brought to you by BrushBeater.store. Currently have a sale going on over there. All spiral-bound field manuals are marked down. And of course, as always, orders over $100 ship 100% free. Got a restock on thermal, got a lot of enablers that are just chronically being sold out. It's like every time I get a shipment in, they are out the door rapidly. And, man, it is really something special to see. Something that I always say it's a big, it lifts me up, the anti-black pill. It lifts me up to see how many people are investing in enablers out there. And we're going to be talking about that quite a bit more. But today I have an incredibly special guest, somebody who is very important and inspirational to me personally, somebody who got me into writing. That's right. The Guerrilla's Guide to the Baofeng Radio, which is still a number one bestseller on Amazon. It's crazy. It's went way beyond all expectations. I never would have wrote that book had I not first been invited to write the communications chapter in the Civil Defense Manual. That's right. Today, I am sitting down with author Jack Lawson, who is a veteran, longtime veteran of conflicts around the world. He's a Rhodesian war veteran from Rhodesian Light Infantry. He is a member of Special Forces Association chapter in Las Vegas, Nevada, an incredible human being, a man who I've been very honored to call a friend over all of these years, somebody who's always given me sound advice and been ready, willing, and able to chip in his expertise in a broad number of things. He's written countless articles, and his books, especially the Civil Defense Manual, I feel are must-haves because they're written from practical experience. Sir, it is an absolute honor to have you on finally after, you know, all of this time trying to get you on, getting our schedules aligned. Now we have you here. We have you in the studio, and this is just really, really incredible. So thank you for being on.
Well, thank you, Matt. The honor is mine, actually. I hear about you all the time. I'm an avid reader of American Partisan. Your book, The Guerrilla's Guide to Baofeng Radio, one of, my communication director and a neighbor is reading it. I'd be holding it up. The bottom line is it's a great book. It's written from a standpoint of what you actually did as a Army forward observer, translated into layman's terms. So a person when things get into conflict in this country, they know what to do with that radio to not broadcast everybody in the world and little techniques and whatnot. I've got about halfway through it, and my communications director of our neighborhood group grabbed it off my desk and said, I'm going to read this. I'll bring it back. So he's due to bring it back anytime here, but it's my honor.
Thank you. Thank you, man. I'll send you out some more copies for dispersal, because you know it's the Southwest, unfortunately, is front row and center to the border invasion, and it's nothing new for y'all. I mean, you know, I have a lot of clients from Southern California and from Arizona and Nevada as well. Obviously, Texas. I'm down in Texas. Usually at least once a year. And I have a lot of people who reach out to me, especially from South Texas and West Texas. But this is something that no corner of the United States is immune to, but you're seeing it in real time. We're seeing the effects of it. I mean, you know, the non-border that we have, the border in name only, the BINO border in name only that we have, that is just being flooded with military age males. And we're already seeing the beginnings of this. If anyone is not paying attention and hasn't been paying attention, you know, something that we've said multiple times, I know you've been on a lot of interviews, you've pointed these things out, the ramifications that are coming from all of this to a neighborhood near you. And we're seeing it. We're seeing the use of cell phone jammers. We're seeing gang attacks now on wealthy homes. That's happening in many, many areas. It's not just a California thing. It's happening in a lot of places. Cell phone jammers are being proliferated out there. And that there's a number of reasons for that. You'd want to jam security systems, which are overwhelmingly cell phone based these days. Previously, pro or semi-pro breaking and entering specialists. You know, I remember around Fayetteville, North Carolina, a decade and a half ago, one of the things that guys would do there that were B&E pros was, this was back in the day when security systems were typically hardwired to a landline. They would go and they would cut that first, and then they would have a converging routes attack coming in from multiple directions on the targeted house. You know, but we're seeing that now with cell phone jammers, and it is gangs of illegals that are doing this, you know, coming in from Venezuela, coming in from Chile. There was another video of Chileans who were rolled up that were doing this. You know, where are these guys, you know, what was their impetus for coming into the United States? There's a lot of questions there. Many of which don't necessarily have comfortable answers. And while we could sit and we could say, you know, hey, how did this happen? It doesn't change the reality that this is something that we're going to have to deal with. Your book, Civil Defense Manual, is a roadmap of how we deal with this. How are you going to organize your people for purpose? What is it that you are going to do? What are the considerations, long-term considerations, food storage, water storage, being top among them? And, you know, you fielded all those questions based on your practical experience. So if you will kind of give us your estimation of where you see all these things, where they are culminating, you know, in the crystal ball, and what people really need to be prepared for.
Well, number one, no other country in the world has border policies that are letting people come in. I've gone into I've probably been in more countries illegally in Africa, but I either parachuted into them or was taken in by helicopter or once walked into. But that's a different situation. Every one of those countries, if you get into, they'll throw your butt out if you don't have a return trip ticket. The point being this, must be the original fools to be letting this go on as it is. And what you say is true. These people, if they don't, you know, they're supposed to be destitute, undocumented foreigners. Well, every one of my scenes got a $500 or $600 cell phone and a pack of cigarettes. You know, so tell me how destitute they are. An amazing thing is, you see probably 1 out of 10 of them in a picture that are women, kids. They're all people say, a guy told me, oh, military age, that's working age. I said, no, that's military age. When you get people that are afraid to disclose their sources, and their sources, I'm sure, are the patriots left in our federal agencies, disclosing that they know these people are A, military, B, intelligence, or C, police trained personnel that are coming in. The bottom line is this. That's heavily on the Chinese side more than anything. But then we have the absolute chaotic terrorists that are coming in. People can bury their head all they want. Eventually, you're going to get hit in the head, in the back of the head with a well-swung 2x4 and wake up to the fact of what you just said earlier to me, and that is, this is ongoing right now. Much of this is being covered up by the news media. If anybody with a brain in their head looks at most of the articles concerning violence, they will not profile the race of the person because they don't want this to become apparent. As far as people preparing for this, we have a couple of levels in the book. The first one is my group in my neighborhood, we put signs out. They're our own creation, but they're similar to Neighborhood Watch. Neighborhood Watch is a good program, unfortunately has a major flaw, and that is when things go bad, you're not going to be able to have the enforcement part of Neighborhood Watch show up, which is your local sheriff or police department. What we do is incorporate our Neighborhood Watch into our neighborhood defense group. And the first thing we do is have signs around that warn people with a very sultry picture of a woman's eyes, a caricature, that they're being watched. And we put these out, and that is the first thing that we want to do. We want to let people know coming into the neighborhood that we're watching what's going on. May not be a threat to anybody, but the bottom line is our neighborhood is called a support group. And if they get the message, fine. If they don't get the message, they're going to get it from somebody that is in our neighborhood. And it may be at the point of a gun. We may have people still calling police. Right now you can get hold of them, but we don't rely on them. We rely on ourselves, and that's very important. Stock food, stock water. Water is the first thing. Lack of water or people drinking things that the mind can't conceive. You can't wrap your mind around what I've heard of people drinking. But the bottom line is water or lack thereof is going to be the biggest danger to people initially. Food second. Get to know your neighbors. Bottom line.
Yeah. And you know, this era of, you know, smartphones and social media, I call it anti-social media because it makes people anti-social.
You know, it's
what it is. I mean, like all joking aside, I mean, people are very uncivil to one another.
Isn't that amazing? Let me interrupt you. I think technology is, I don't want to sound stick in the mud. I'm 77, but I don't want to sound stick in the mud like, oh, that old guy, he doesn't. It's destroying people. And the reason is,
yes,
it's a medium in between people, whether they're seeing each other's face or just commenting on some social platform. They'll say things to each other that if they said it in person, the person saying it probably get his nose punched through the back of his skull. You know, or his arm broken or something, or maybe not as bad as that, but they now say things that unfortunately build a pressure up in of animosity in people. And I keep telling my wife, dump your damn Facebook. Well, she doesn't really do much on it anymore because she's conservative. She's British from Africa. She's been through all this stuff. she first gained notoriety when she started telling everybody this. What the first of 2020 when the COVID thing came out, she said, "This is a joke. I've been through typhus and cholera in Africa. This is a joke. It's a hoax."
Yeah.
And but people will say stuff that she just got bombarded. Oh, you're not reading this right. And she said her response was, "Are you a virologist?" You know, well, she's got practical experience, but it's crazy. Technology has done a lot of damage.
It absolutely has. And while there's certainly some upsides to it, it's socially for us, it's been overwhelmingly negative. People can't seem to think past devices and this interconnectivity that is all artificial and we don't need it. But, you know, we can always distill it down to like, go outside, touch grass. You know, that's kind of been the meme that's grown out of that. It's go out, touch grass. But where I'm going with all this is that realistically preparing begins with understanding that social interaction is a necessity and that humans by nature are social creatures. You know, we are pack hunters. That's when you distill down everything that, you know, so biologically, physiologically, why our eyes are set in the front and, you know, our senses and basically everything, the way that our bodies are configured, it's to be a social creature. The reason that our heads articulate the way that they do, our ears are on the side of our head, this is something I point out a lot of times in class, we're configured that way. The biomechanics of it is configured that way for a reason. And all of it is so that we're pack hunters, you know, and this kind of lays the foundation of infantry movements and, you know, at the small team level, the team wedge and in a file and, you know, kind of how we are organized for purpose. As something that a lot of people.
Interesting. I saw a great picture. I wish I knew how to put it up, but it showed a progression of a pack of wolves going from point A to point B. Had three or four young warriors up front. Had the females and the young in the middle. It had a couple of warriors at the end. And then the old boys, they were bringing up the rear end of the thing there. And it was interesting how they've sorted out what to do. I think we have that ability. We are human beasts. Even though we think otherwise, we wear shoes and we wear clothes. But the bottom line is, we're beasts to the degree that we act like one. There's actually another book that I totally recommend, and it's the Bible. I don't know where you are in this, but I'm not reading it because I'm afraid of the end coming. I'm reading it because I'm reading three books. I'm reading the Quran. I'm reading Jews, God, and History by Max Diamond. And I'm reading the Bible. It's just fascinating stories. And I think they told us all the mistakes they've made and how to be. But that book, I think, is something that people need to get their heads into. They don't have to start speaking in tongues and flopping down in the church aisle and going crazy. Get your head into that Bible and read some of these things and read it again. I think it's a fascinating story.
Well, for example, the book of Leviticus and Deuteronomy that form the foundation of, you know, the laws of, you know, the Torah and determines what's kosher and for Muslims determines you know, what's halal and what you can eat and what you can't. When you begin to look at that, there's a reason for that. beyond the religiosity of it, that it's telling you, it was instructing everyone of given religion, hey, don't eat those things because, you know, it's haram, it's not kosher, it's unclean. They're not telling you that because, hey, don't eat that because it's delicious. They're telling you that because there are a lot of pathogens that could be transmitted, trichinosis, for example, which is fatal. If you follow a kosher diet or a halal diet or a Mediterranean diet, for everybody, you know, us Christians, we'd call it a Mediterranean diet, the chances of you getting intestinal diseases, foodborne diseases, is greatly diminished because we're not consuming things that we probably shouldn't consume. Now, I mean, I'm a pork eating crusader myself.
I'm a swine fan.
Exactly. You know, I've ate all kinds of stuff, man. You know, snake and bear and, you know, rabbits, yeah. You know, which are pretty benign, but
you can make a belly go puke.
Yeah, I've consumed some things that, you know, people will be like, I don't know about that. But, you know, the point is, though, is that those laws exist and they are continued and practiced for a reason. There's a lot of knowledge in there that's being handed off. There's a lot of farming knowledge. There's a lot of preparedness knowledge. You know, one of the things in the Old Testament is the use of wine to purify water because a lot of the fresh water sources were unclean. This is how you do it. It's telling you, hey, you know, don't distill alcohol because we want to get drunk. You do it to purify the water. You're killing off cholera, you know, and you know, things that are absolutely fatal to you. So it's basic practices like that. And so it's a good instruction guidebook to say, hey, you know, this is how people did it several thousand years ago, you know, in the case of the Old Testament. And of course, you know, in the Quran, you know, a couple thousand or a thousand or so years ago, New Testament, a couple thousand years ago, this is how we did things. It's probably, you know, modernization is no different. One unfortunate reality about modernization is that we take a lot for granted these days. Food supplies being one of them. We're so used to having a grocery store to go to that is mostly stocked. I mean, I remember when COVID was first becoming a thing and shortages were very minor on the shelves, shortages of stuff. People were freaking out. They were losing their mind. What do you think that looks like big scale? You know, when there's real shortages of stuff.
I think that, I don't think I know our system. They have, in our supply system, it's been redesigned over the last 30 years, especially since computer technology took over, to become an instantaneous supply system. Used to be a manufacturer, grocery store or whatever organization it was, Costco or a dollar store, they had a hub, a warehouse. They don't have that anymore. It's literally direct from the manufacturer to that. You go to the grocery store and buy a loaf of bread. By the time you've paid for that loaf of bread, the store has already ordered another one. Now, it doesn't order one at a time. It accumulates them. At maybe 10 o'clock at night, it'll send to that baker that we need 1,500 loaves of bread. So by probably 4 to 6 o'clock in the morning, that bread is baked, it's put on trucks, and it's delivered to that grocery store. We do not have that extra reserve of food anymore, number one. Number two, we have strayed so far from the garden-to-table existence that it's unbelievable. I can remember growing up, of course, I'm 77 again. I can remember in the 50s and 60s, my mother, I came from a southern Minnesota farm family. We had enough food to feed half the Russian army. I mean, my mom canned everything. Levin and her family, we had a huge garden. When I was farming, I used to plow it 2 acres with my plow and disc harrow it and prepare it. The parts that she didn't have growing constantly. And nobody has that anymore. There's no butcher in town to where the local, some of this is coming back, but it's such a pittance. I feel like an insurance salesman sometime, Matt. I'm trying to sell a concept to people, and it's not tangible, in essence, like an insurance policy. It's not tangible because it's so taken for granted, food and water, that people don't see it as something that's a physical, tangible item. And it gets to where I feel like I'm beating a drum. I beg Americans. I beg them to start saving containers that will hold water. I go through all this stuff in the civil defense manual. The bottom line is, somewhere or another, store some water up. Buy a couple extra cans of solid, high-caloric food. Stick them under your bed. Don't put them in your cupboard. Start stockpiling food. Start stockpiling water. And you damn well better get to know who your neighbors are, because if things go south, for instance, a grid, you watch this summer, we're going to have a lot of outages. It's building up to it. They almost tell you what's going to happen before it happens. When I say they, I'm saying a lot of this, I think, is driven behind the scenes by what people term globalists or elitists. The same ones that are going to do this are playing everybody, the left and the right. And I see the grid going down as one of our danger, real dangers in this country. We are totally dependent on it. You got a supply system that's been modified. You now have a system that is so regulated by computers and driven by electricity that we're very, very vulnerable. Let me ask you, what do you think would happen if the grid went down? I'm laughing because I know what your answer is going to be.
Yeah, so a lot of people have given that hypothetical, well, we'd have 3 days from complete chaos. Nah. We got 18 hours at best. At best, 18 hours. Because when you think about it, how many people out there don't even have, we'll say, a couple of days worth of food at the calorie content that they're used to enjoying, right? Which is fairly high compared to other corners of the world, right? You know, I mean, Americans eat, you know, they recommend we eat 2,000 calories a day, right? Okay. Typically we're consuming quite a bit more than that. And you can tell by our obesity rates that that's a thing. You know, we're consuming a lot, and people start getting hungry.
That one statement you made, the obesity, people have said that there'll be starvation within 60 days. Starvation. Mm-hmm. I extended it another month because Americans are so obese that living for another month off the fat supplies in their body, that doesn't really work that way.
But you know, the thing about this is that people are going to get mean, and you've got about 18 hours now. When you throw in all the other fracturing that we have along, you know, whatever lines that are real or imagined, doesn't matter. You know, the economics line, racial lines, regional lines, cultural lines, whatever lines that exist that are creating those social fractures. And that, you know, a whole other topic unto itself. The fact is that chaos is going to happen. You've got 18 hours, right? And, you know, and people say, well, I mean, natural disasters happen all the time. And they do, you know, we have wildfires, we have hurricanes. So it, and, you know, does chaos occur within 18 hours? Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I have many such cases.
There's people that can come in from the outside if these are localized. The problem with a grid down situation, these grids are also interconnected now. I've got a friend that's very versed in this stuff. He says we are 83 gigabytes short this summer. I think he said the country uses 243 gigabytes a year of electricity. He said, because of proliferation of computers, electronics, electricity use, he said that we are 83 gigabytes short this summer. In addition, they're shutting coal fire plants down. This is one reason they're bringing this Michigan nuclear plant online, but how long it's going to take them, I don't know. But the point being this, there's going to be brownouts this summer. You're going to start seeing a different evolution of what you're living in. And people are going to see some crazy things happening. That's beside everything else, just from a supply standpoint. That's going to affect everything.
Yeah. No, I mean, absolutely, because everything is interconnected. The people's freaking out over the, you know, the Francis Scott Key Bridge, which is the, you know, the most recent example of this, which is a big deal for a lot of reasons, right? A lot of reasons, but, you know, kind of putting the incident and maybe the causal factors aside, let's talk about, you know, supply chain issues and the high potential for that. And there's two vectors. You know, the main artery for I-95 just got cut off because it's laying at the bottom of that waterway. But now you've got a port that's going to be closed for it, and it's still closed, by the way. And one of the major ones, I think it's the seventh largest in the United States. That's closed. And you may say, well, okay, seventh largest, not that big of a deal. How much is manufactured in Baltimore? How much is exiting that port on top of what's coming in? And now the goods that were coming in there can't be delivered through an efficient means like they were previously. So it's a cascading failure that you have there. Now you talk about, you throw in the fact that there is a likelihood we are short of energy. That is not an exaggeration. You know, we have a problem with that because it's short-sighted policies that have went into this. You know, this green energy stuff is not working. Okay, it is absolutely not working. That's why the focus is going back to nuclear. But you can't just stand that up overnight. You certainly can't stand it up in 2 months before we begin to get into the peak season for much of the continental United States for power consumption. That ain't happening.
I'm astounded at what we've ended up with for leadership in this country. There's somebody made a statement once, I think about it, every very simplistic. How can you tell a politician is lying? His lips are moving. You know, it's true. These people are so... I think 95% of Congress and of the Congress has been bought off, Senate and representatives. You see this constantly. I just read 70 to 75% of Americans do not want to see any aid going to Israel or the Ukraine until this border is plugged up. I mean, it's probably to a point to where too late in the border now, but at least do something. What do? They turn a guy who's supposed to be conservative into pushing this thing. It's like they've got some kind of virus they're infecting these people with. You know, vote the way we want. I say they do five things. They either remove these people by assassinating them. They humiliate them and degrade them. They blackmail them, or they simply sidestep them, or they pay them off. One of those five things. And in the process of doing that, it is it's like you've heard of Colonel McGregor.
Yep.
Yeah. He says that our government is no longer run by people. We may elect somebody or think we do. It's being run by the donor class. And who gives money to the political, the campaigns of these political people? And I think it's just turned to, we have a wonderful experiment for probably 500 years of the history of the world, recorded history. We've lived in relative civility. I mean, there's been pandemics, been a lot of wars, but it hasn't been killing each other off to survive with water and food. We've had a wonderful experiment in individual liberties. I don't think it lasted much more than 50 years until the bankers got their fangs into us in 1830, but for a while we had something that was an amazing anomaly in the history of the world. Outside of the Roman Republic, and I don't consider that the last one, the first one, and probably the last 200 years, we've lived in relative civility. And unfortunately, everybody's lost the idea of what that is until they got a jackboot stepping on their face. And somebody, it's a liberal, saying, well, we know he's stepping on your face, but you got to understand, you got free dental, and he's got 100% literacy, you know, and that's just generally the way these clowns think, and they are delusional. But unfortunately, that's something that's beyond my control and your control. We do what we can to protect our areas, and that's it. So
100%.
That was my wifey poo, incognito.
Yeah. Pop it in. Bomb. No, yeah, but shifting gears a little bit and dovetailing on what you're pointing out with the jackboots. You know, we know that the LAPD has now begun recruiting. This is something I predicted many years ago, that this was going to happen as our governmental apparatuses, whether that is local, state, or at the federal level, was going to begin to import people into their law enforcement positions who are politically reliable. The way that you do that is you have outsiders come in who are beholden to none other than the people who are giving them their paycheck. We did this, by the way. We the United States, did this. I saw it firsthand in Iraq. If you wanted an honest and non-corruptible police force, quote unquote, which is kind of a stretch to make that claim. In Iraq, what you do is you import another population in to become that police force. So you would have a lot of Shias who would become the police in predominantly Sunni areas because they were not part of that infrastructure, that local infrastructure. They weren't loyal to anyone who's local in an area. I know here in North Carolina, you know, when somebody becomes a state trooper in North Carolina State Highway Patrol, you can't work in the county that you are originally from. If you were a North Carolina resident for a while, you can't just, you know, you get hired on, you graduate from the academy, you can't just go to your home county at first. You got to prove yourself somewhere else. And that's part of it. That's the strategy behind it. Well, the LAPD is now hiring illegals. We know that they're doing this. This is real. This is verified. It is a real policy, right? Chicago, state of Illinois, which was recently the focal point of a federal court case that kind of got the libertarians up in a tizzy and a lot of short-sightedness with the libertarians, where they Governor Pritzker wanted to authorize his law enforcement agencies to hire illegals, quote unquote, to make up for their recruiting shortfalls, a recruiting shortfall that is created by their bad policies, by the way. So they are creating a problem. They're offering a solution that is unpalatable to most in order to exploit the results, which is, you know, Hegelian in nature. It's what they're doing. They had a federal court judge who was an Obama appointee in the Chicago political machine that ruled that if you're an illegal, you do have the right to have a firearm in the United States. They did this so that they can use them as police. That is what they are doing. They put them in law enforcement. So those jackboots, just as you pointed out, they are giving them legal authorization to become thus. That's what they're doing. They brought in people that are not beholden to you and I, to traditional Americans, to, yes, you know, the citizenry of America.
I sat on a police board for 7 years, one of the biggest in the country, and I've seen firsthand what happens with the supposed integration of women. I can just tell you, I know some women that could kick just about anybody, but some women helicopter pilots that are good. But that's an exception to the rule. They're lowering standards to get these people in. Ask anybody on the police board I served on, get them alone and get them to understand you're not going to be ratting them out. And every one of them to a man will tell you they do not want a female partner. Now, that sounds gender phobic, but it's the truth of the way situation. A good friend of mine, a lieutenant, basically got his back broken because he showed up in a domestic dispute. A guy as big as a door opened the door when he pounded on, because they pounded on it waiting for the backup, but they heard a lot of noise in there. And his 105-pound partner took one punch to the face, was in a coma for 45 days. He got slammed down to the ground against the building and ruptured some of his vertebrae just as their backup was coming around the corner and sorted this guy out. But the point being this, I think all of this is leading to the feminization of men. I don't see, and look, I'm not a tough guy. I'm not trying to tell people that I'm the man's man. But the bottom line is I've done what I've needed to do in the light of being a male. And I'm astounded at some of, not all, but some of the people my age and younger who have gotten literally feminized. They're afraid of their own shadow. My wife and I were down in a big city. I'll just tell you how bad this is. This has gotten. We're down in a big city and on business. And she wanted another pair of the perfect pants, which she'd already bought. So we went into this Macy's, Dillard's, this big shopping mall. And I've walked all over Africa, and I somewhat enjoyed that. But walking in a shopping center is really brutal to me. So in a mall. So I sat down in this supposed designer chair. It was a freaking it should have been something used for torture. But I sit down, I pull my, I had my chapter special force hat on, I pulled it down over. I told her, I said, look, I'm going to take a nap. You come out, wake me up when you're done. I don't want to go look at pants. So I'm there, probably went to start dozing off for about 5 minutes. And I heard this blood curdling scream. And I jumped up and looked around. I didn't see anything. And the guy next to me jumped up and he runs over to the escalator, which had stopped. So I run over there. And for whatever reason, he goes back and sits in his chair. Well, me, 77 years, took two steps at a time, roared to the top. And I looked around. There's a huge crowd up there. I'm looking around, first, to see if there's a danger to myself. Second, what was happening. And third, what can I do to help? Now, I'm the only one on the escalator, and this lady's standing there. And she's got a Versace handbag. She's grossly obese. Must have had a $40,000 nose ring. And she's sitting there. She got the leash on a little dog that got his foot caught in the escalator. Well, somebody's smart enough to stop it. But this dog was getting ready to be a tripod. You know, I mean, it was so I took my knife out. I told her, I said, shut up. I said, hold your dog's mouth so he doesn't bite me. So I took my knife and I pried it just far enough to get this little dog's foot out. And then I tied it off with one of my handkerchiefs. So it was bleeding all over the place. And I told her, I said, you better get that to a vet right now. Now there's probably 30 people there. And two of them are all security guys in their spiffy yellow and black uniforms. And I looked up at them and I said, what are they paying you guys for? And they're all embarrassed. One was about 20, another in 40. And there's this huge crowd. It's getting bigger all the time because they heard all the screaming. And not one of the men there lifted a finger to do anything. I was astounded at the inaction of people. Well, there were two of them videoing this whole thing. But when I leaned over
they can't lift a finger. I mean, I'm laughing at the irony of the situation. Many cases of this. They can't lift a finger to help this lady, but they're going to whip that phone out. Wow.
They're videoing this. And so I leaned over pulled my knife out, and you know, the good size knife, stout thing, and pried that up just enough to get his foot out. Somebody had my 9mm on me and a spare magazine and flashlight, and somebody said, he's got a gun. And I was so pissed. I wanted to stop and tell him, yes, you morons, because somebody's got to do something. And I know if I had there was a problem here, it wouldn't be you guys doing it. And it was just astounded me that all of these men stood around and just gaping, and they were actually making noises like the women. So the point being this, if you do get together in your neighbors, don't get too hopeful that they're all going to help you out. There's just a terrible disconnect from reality with these people. They don't know what to do when there's an emergency, you know. Not that I'm the big hero or anything. I love dogs. If that lady had gotten her foot caught in there, I might have just left it, you know. I mean, it's just, they're just, that's, I think this is confined to the major metro areas. It's everybody's walking around looking at their phone. They're just disconnected from everything.
Right. Well, they're so interconnected electronically. They're disconnected from reality.
Correct.
You know?
That's a better term.
Everybody wants to whip out their camera and record like all that's why I was laughing. The irony of the situation. Like, look, dude, put the damn phone down. It's not doing you no favors. You
know, he's got a gun. I'll never forget that.
Have you ever seen a firearm before? This doesn't look like a firearm at all.
Yeah.
Not a handgun, definitely not a rifle. Yeah.
It's sad, but you combine that with what we've got. I think what you'll probably see with Grid Down, you're going to see A, gangs and ruthless people get bigger and be well fed, and B, all of these pussified people are going to be, they're either going to die off or get killed off. They will become the person that goes banging on a door and first asks, second begs, and then third tries to break the door down. They're going to be desperate. They have no clue. I have to tell you this. My daughter lives in a major metro. She's married to an attorney. They both make a lot of money. Expensive house. I went there to visit. My wife and I were there to visit. And I asked her, what do you have to eat? And she says, look in her fridge in the pantry. So I look in her refrigerator. There's all this ordered in food because they're both working all the time. And then I go in her pantry and I came out and I said, you know something? You guys have more dog food, plastic bags, garbage bags, and paper towels than you got food. And I told her, I said, okay, I told her husband, okay, come on, get in the car. We're going to go down and buy you 100 pounds of rice and 50 pounds of beans. At least you have something. And don't need it. Don't need it. Well, he's starting to change his tune a little, I think, now. Because it's a point of what you do here, talking to people, it plants a seed in people's minds. They don't think of it until you start bringing the things up that you bring on your show, Matt, they start thinking about this. The next time they read the paper, they start, this stuff is echoing in their head. And I think it starts an interest in people becoming aware of what the reality can be. So, and I thank you for doing that.
Wow. Thank you. I mean, you know, it's, you're a man who's lived it, and you're doing something unique in, and you've lived it many times over, by the way. I mean, you know, it's you've seen the worst of the worst and what can become of societies when those guardrails are removed, and you're willing to share what you know, which is a very unique thing in our community. A lot of people, you know, and I had multiple conversations all last week. We had a Kay up here from Combat Studies Group. He is an incredible human being, very, very good friend of mine. Certainly has been there, done that. I mean, yeah, he's really just gifted trainer. And, you know, of course, I was working all during the week and facilitating his courses and making a lot of the moves and stuff that I had going on. But, you know, it a conversation that we had and repeatedly had and was, you know, kind of after hours, after the classes was having, is that it's a very unique thing when you have people who are willing to share what they know. A lot of us are just content with, you know, hey, I just want to be left alone. I'm just going to retreat out of the limelight. And, you know, I did what I did and, you know, all right, whatever, I'm done with it. And it's, and I'm not faulting anybody, by the way. If you know, you're a veteran or, you know, or, you know, you had a career in law enforcement or firefighting and you just want to retreat out of all that stuff, that, hey man, I just want to be left alone. Look, brother, you did your time. You made your contributions on the world and that's fine. Certainly you earned that right. But to the guys who are willing to share what they know and try and make the community better and make the world a better place, especially at what I consider to be one of the most pivotal times in history right now, where we are, it's because there are so many intersecting factors where we literally are facing what could be the collapse of Western civilization within a decade.
Yeah, let me tell you something. If anybody thinks that you've got a tinfoil hat on, they better start getting out and getting around a little bit, A. And B, when you have 10 former high-ranking DHS, Department of Homeland Service Security, and FBI and CIA guys send a letter to Congress saying, hey, there's problems coming. The biggest one there highlighting are the illegals, and you call them whatever you want, but they're illegals. And the long and short of the thing is, I don't know if they think you or I have a tinfoil hat on, but the bottom line is we're in pretty good company, because these were the cream of federal agencies, and they see a problem, a massive problem coming, and they're trying to warn Congress of it. And override that donor class thing as far as motivation for these people to do something. And I don't see it going anywhere. The border is still getting flooded. We're at 141,000 in Arizona in the last month. That is insane.
And to confound things, I mean, people typically who are outside of the Southwest and are kind of just waking up to the reality of the situation are under the mindset, the mistaken mindset. Well, you know, it's only guys coming in from Central America or South America, and you know, they come in for a better life or whatever. Now you got a lot of Chinese coming in too. And with the way that the CCP is run, you don't just walk out of China. You know, no. Now I've had.
That's interesting you say that. I've read about this very thing. You can't just get on a plane and leave, period, end of story.
Right. No, doesn't happen. Now, I've had Knightsbridge Intelligence on, or Knightsbridge Research, rather, private intelligence firm, who, you know, his Matt Williams, which is the spokesman for the organization. I've had him on for a number of interviews. He says, well, you know, there's a lot of Chinese workers in South America that are just kind of migrating. And that all may be true, but what was the impetus for that? There was an impetus here. And, you know, now we have 29 Palms in California, Marine Corps training area. They had a Chinese spy, okay? You know, I'm sure that somebody listening to this show who's on the other side of things is, well, that wasn't actually a spy. Nobody really knows.
BS.
Look, man.
He was so arrogant about telling
you. Oh, yeah.
It's unbelievable.
You're an illegal.
He's got rights.
Amen. I mean, yeah, you're an illegal. You walked onto a known military outpost, right? Military base, rather, which 29 Palms is out in the middle of nowhere. It's out in the middle of nowhere. It's just like Fort Irwin. It's out in the middle of nowhere. You don't just walk out there, right? That is desolate terrain. What was he going out there to do? Because he is a spy. He is a spy. Now, could be sabotage, could be military espionage. Who knows? You name it. He's probably up to it. But we have to, if we're going to assume anything, we assume that that guy is hostile. How many of them have come across the border? Tens of thousands.
How many are they not caught? How many
exactly
infiltrated? It just bothered me. 29 Palms is pretty damn desolate. I had a friend, he was a gunnery sergeant. He moved there. They drove. He just got married to a woman, and he said they drove and got in there about 2 o'clock in the morning. He said, my wife wakes up the next morning about 10 o'clock, looks out the window and starts crying. That's how desolate that place is. It is. My son lived in one of those little metal chicken coops when he was in the Marines out there. You know, just get up to 140 degrees in the day.
Yeah, man, Death Valley. I've been out there. I've been to Fort Irwin a number of times too. Man, that really is no man's land in the summertime. It's rough. But with that said, sir, Civil Defense Manual, civildefensemanual.com. You can find the books over there. It is obviously a 2-volume set, and I wrote the communications chapter for it at your request, which was a huge honor. There's a number of other excellent authors that contributed to it. Matt Bracken being one, Mike Shelby from Forward Observer being another. I know Bracken contributed a number of articles to it that were just
Matt encouraged me actually to finish the book. I wrote the first one, and he was out in his yacht, and he told his wife, take the wheel, I gotta read this again. He went down, he said, I've only read 2 books twice. He said, yours and the Bible. And I said, oh, come on. But he encouraged me to finish the Civil Defense Manual because it was a daunting project. I researched everything that's in there. I stand by it. And like your Guerrilla's Guide to the Baofeng Radio, it's comprehensive. And that's what I like. People can go to your website, American Partisan, and find information on it that they can, links to information. And I want to tell you the honor's mine. I thank you very much for getting me on here.
Absolutely, sir. Absolutely. And anytime, I look forward to getting you back on. It's very, very soon. Folks, civildefensemanual.com. Jack Lawson on with us. Of course, brushbeater.store. Got all the things, right? All the stuff, everything that is up on that store I use personally. And we're going to be adding new products as the summertime kicks into high gear. We're transitioning from the spring into the summer. Weather is getting nice. We're going to have a number of new things that we're going to be bringing out. And I'm real excited for it. God bless. Keep your head on a swivel. Stay prepared. Get to know your neighbors. Get right with God. With all that said, folks, it's been great talking to you, and I look forward to talking to you again very, very soon. Zen Sea Scout out.
Thank you.